This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, the constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Coming up a little later in the show, we'll be hearing from Commissioner Cliff May about a report from the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Also, the Federal Communications Commission Chairman, Ajit Pai, joins Tony to talk about net neutrality. But first, North Korea has been test-firing rocket after rocket lately in an attempt, it seems, to intimidate or threaten the United States. And this past week, the U.S. successfully tested a missile intercept system, shooting down a simulated incoming warhead. Dr. Graham Allison, who is the director of the Belfer Center for Science and International Affairs at Harvard University, joined Tony on Tuesday to talk about it.
Dr. Allison, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let me get your opinion on this. How serious is the situation with North Korea right now?
Extremely.
Is it because you have a combination of this 33-year-old dictator who's, in my view, not quite right, but he has these missiles, which he is trying to flex his muscle and basically show that he's somebody on the world stage. Are there other factors in here that makes this volatile?
I think for most Americans, the situation is truly bizarre. How can a small, isolated, impoverished country be just about to acquire the ability to attack the U.S., to attack San Francisco or Los Angeles with nuclear weapons? Makes no sense. I mean, I tried to explain this to one of my relatives this past weekend. They said, forget about it. This is impossible. I mean, this guy can hardly feed his people. But the fact is that in the foreseeable future, not very long, on the current path, Kim Jong-un, this very erratic, strange character who runs North Korea, will have the capability to attack San Francisco or Los Angeles with a nuclear weapon. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, President Trump had said, from the first time he ever heard of this idea, which he also found unbelievable when Obama told him about it in the handover, he says, this is not going to happen. He said, he tweeted immediately, not going to happen. And he said over and over, he's not going to allow this to happen. So we're coming to a crossroads where he's going to have to choose between attacking North Korea, running the risk of basically initiating a second Korean War, that's one hand, or living with Kim Jong-un being able to attack San Francisco or Los Angeles with a nuclear weapon. And these are lousy choices.
Now, let me put this in context for people. You say that in the not-too-distant future, they'll have the ability to reach the continental United States with one of these missiles, and you're saying it's within the first term of Donald Trump. So we're talking months.
So what the American intelligence community has said repeatedly. So I'm just repeating what they say, but right. I believe it from the evidence I've looked at is that not in a day or two, but I've compared it to a Cuban Missile Crisis in slow motion. That was a 13-day. Tense, the most dangerous moment in recorded history. Maybe 13 months, but not forever. So certainly in the first term, if interrupted, Kim Jong-un will acquire this capability.
You just mentioned the Cuban Missile Crisis. You actually mentioned that in your piece in the New York Times today as one of the most dangerous points in modern history where we were at the threshold of a nuclear war. Are we at a very similar spot now?
Well, not quite, but almost. Because if you, again, as I say, it seems so strange that this little pipsqueak crisis could be this big of a problem. But when it comes to the point of choice, if Trump has to choose between attacking North Korea so that it cannot conduct more missile tests, so that it won't be able to attack the U.S., that's option one, or option two, living with North Korea being able to attack the continental U.S., what is he going to choose? God only knows. He said he's going to attack, and I believe it's quite possible that he's going to attack. If he does, what's going to happen? Well, we can certainly destroy the capability of North Korea to launch missiles, for sure. But North Korea, our intelligence community tells us, will most likely retaliate by an artillery barrage against Seoul that could kill as much as a million people in a few hours. Well, my God, okay, so a million people, that's unbelievable. And then what happens? Well, then the U.S. and South Korea will destroy all of the other assets North Korea has for attacking South Korea. Otherwise, they may kill another 10 million people. So we'll attack all of their air, all of their missiles, all of their rockets. Well, now you've just initiated the Second Korean War. And most Americans can't remember, but in the First Korean War, we were marching rapidly up the Korean Peninsula, just about to unify North Korea, when China entered the war and beat us back down to the 38th parallel, where the divide, you know, continues today. So this is the most likely path that I see in the near future for this book that I just did publish called Destined for War, Can America and China Escape Thucydides' Trap? This is the most likely path that I portray in that book for getting to a war that neither China nor the U.S. wants, and that after which both China and the U.S. would look and say, my God, how did we let such a little pipsqueak event have such huge, devastating consequences?
Wow. It is a very, very serious situation. Dr. Allison, thank you so much for joining us. Very insightful piece. I encourage people to go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and follow the links over. Again, Dr. Allison, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me, and I'd be happy to come back anytime. Thanks.
You can find Dr. Allison's article on North Korea when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's tonyperkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back with a look at the increasing violence against Christians around the world.
Girls having privacy in school showers, locker rooms, and bathrooms is a no-brainer, right? Fairfax County, Virginia has become ground zero in the efforts to impose transgender ideology on American school children. In a panel discussion that includes a school board member, a concerned parent, and an attorney, tactics used by the transgender lobbyists are exposed and strategies parents and taxpayers can use to fight back are explored. Visit frc.org/events to view this vital discussion to combat the transgender ideology in public schools.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. On Wednesday's edition of Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins, Tony was joined by Commissioner Cliff May to talk about the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom's 2017 report on the state of religious freedom. Here now is Tony Perkins.
Cliff, let's start with the overarching theme of the report. According to, and I've read through the report, the commission sees religious freedom worldwide as becoming, well, threatened in many, many countries.
It's not been good probably ever, but we are not seeing improvements. And I think for a while, what could have been a few years ago, one might have been hopeful about that. But at this point, we think it's probably worsening. And of course, the most obvious and egregious is that you have the rise of Islamism, of jihadism in so many parts of the world, and the Islamists and the jihadists are attacking all religious minorities that remain, in particularly in the broader Middle East. The worst, of course, is the genocide of Christians, of Yazidis, and some other minorities in Syria and Iraq, where we're seeing the possibility of these ancient religious communities being wiped out once and for all, exterminated absolutely forever. And I would argue that there's no violation of religious freedom that's more lethal and more egregious than extermination. I mean, communities can bounce back from terrible oppression and persecution, but once they're wiped out, that's the end of it.
Well, you write about this in the Washington Times. I read your piece there, where you point out this is a very serious issue, because when you lose the freedom of religion, the other freedoms are not far behind.
Well, not only that, I would almost go in the other direction and say that the most basic freedom is the right to, in your heart, in your brain, to believe or not believe what you want, the right to worship. if you don't have that, you're certainly not going to have freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, all the freedoms in the Bill of Rights that I hope Americans still hold dear. You have to build on the most basic, which is in your heart of hearts, you get to believe what you want to believe or not believe what you want to believe. And if you don't start there, you're not going to get any further.
Now, the report, there's a new country on the list for the first time in the top tier of countries of concern, of particular concern. Tell our listeners that new country that's on the list.
And just so people understand, there are 193 countries in the world. We look at particularly at 36 of them that we consider to be important. Of those, there are 10 that are designated as CPCs, that is, countries of particular concern. That's where the violations of religious freedom are most egregious. We make our recommendations to Congress, to the State Department, and to the President regarding this and other matters of religious freedom. There are countries we think should be designated as CPCs that the State Department hasn't yet, but at the end of the day, the State Department's designation is most consequential. Now, the one that we, in particular, think we have to add at this point is Russia. It's a new, from the point of view of the commission of USERF, it's a new CPC, country of particular concern, recommendation based on its intensified violations of religious freedom in Russia proper and in neighboring Ukraine. One of the worst parts is the absolute banning of Jehovah's Witnesses on April 20th. This is a group that is pacifist, this is a group that's no threat to the government, and yet they are entirely banned.
What I find fascinating about that, Cliff, is because it was in the mid-1990s that the doors were wide open in Russia to Christians from around the world, and in particular the United States, went there to evangelize. They were in the schools. They were welcomed everywhere. And in less than two decades, we see this crackdown on religion in Russia.
You're right, and we do. And I guess I would say that the most apparent reason is that President Putin believes that Russia should be Russian Orthodox and that other religions shouldn't be butting in and competing for the faithful. And so he has been cracking down, particularly on those religions that that may seek converts. Again, seeking converts is another freedom. First, you believe what you believe, and you say, okay, if you want to seek converts. People have the right to make up their own mind. But we just start with, can you believe what you want to believe? Can you worship as you want to worship? Or are those most basic freedoms violated? Are those suppressed? And when you ban a religion, of course, that's absolutely the case.
And, of course, kind of a guideline for the work that the commission does goes back to the 1948 Declaration of Human Rights, which, as they state out in religious freedom, is the ability to change one's religion if you so choose.
That's exactly right. And what we're seeing in too many countries, Pakistan would be one of them, which is not on the State Department list as a country of particular concern, and I think, we think at USERF, that it ought to be. You have blasphemy laws. You have laws against conversion. You have laws that we get capital punishment if, for example, a Muslim wants to convert and become a Christian. You may have blasphemy laws in other countries as well, but the idea of capital punishment for conversion, that's a particularly, I would say, Islamist idea, that you don't have that freedom to change your religion. And that's particularly true in Pakistan, where you have Christians. One of the more famous cases is that of a woman by the name of Asia Bibi, a Christian in Pakistan. She fetched some water for some Muslim neighbors. From what we understand, one of the Muslim neighbors said, I won't drink it. It's unclean. It comes from a Christian. She said, aren't we human beings like you are? Don't know what else exactly was said, but Asia Bibi was arrested some years ago. Put on trial for blasphemy, for insulting the Prophet, for insulting Islam. The governor of Punjab, Tasir Salim, he defended her and said blasphemy laws are not something we should have here, particularly like this. He was assassinated by his own bodyguard. And Asia Bibi remains in prison to this day.
Hmm. Cliff, we're out of time. I want to thank you for stopping by and want to get you back on to talk more about this issue. It's something our listeners care a lot about.
You can find out more about the Commission's report when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we come back, net neutrality and the threats against the FCC chairman.
Mark your calendars for the 2017 Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. This is a must-attend event to inform and mobilize Americans to protect religious liberty, champion traditional values, strengthen national security, and limit the size of government. Invited speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Franklin Graham, and many more. Register now at the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. The Federal Communications Commission has been embroiled in recent years as the Obama administration gave away control of the Internet to an international body and reclassified the Internet as a public utility in an attempt to gain regulatory control over it. FCC Chairman Ajit Pai joined Tony on Thursday to talk about what's changed at the FCC since January.
Chairman Pai, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back on.
It's been an interesting couple of months since you've become chairman. You seem to be pretty popular.
Good choice of adjectives. Interesting is the right way to put it. But, I had 4.5 years in the minority to think about what we could do and would do if we were in the majority. And lightning struck, and we've been hitting the ground running the last 4 months.
Before we get into kind of the tactics of the left, because I think it's very instructive, and I think people need to be aware of it, first, let's take on the topic. What has the left so exercised here? The net neutrality, explain that to our listeners, what that's all about.
Net neutrality involves the basic concept of internet regulation. Do you want the government regulating how the internet is structured, how it operates, or do you want the private sector, the market, to make those decisions? And to me, at least, we had a free market for about 20 years, starting in 1996 until 2015, and our internet economy became the envy of the world without the U.S. government micromanaging it. And that changed a couple of years ago, and all we've simply proposed to do in the current administration is go back to the way it was prior to 2015. And for a variety of reasons, some folks in some political quarters have decided that this is simply unacceptable to them, and they're going to resist it by any means necessary.
I mean, this is classic. I mean, you're not the only agency that's just trying to return things to the way they were, status quo, going back to the way they were before the Obama administration. But you would think that you're taking bread from children, you're waxing the stairs at the nursing homes, and you're doing all of these crazy things that is going to lead to mass destruction.
And it's just amazing. That kind of overstatement, I think, is disregarded by most Americans, at least the ones I talk to. They're more interested in getting internet access in rural areas and making sure their kids and their grandparents have the technology that will help them improve their lives. And they're not focused on this inside the beltway special interest debate about who can persuade the FCC to dispense the most goodies or regulate the internet. They're focused on what's going to produce value for the American consumer. And that's been my lodestar since I got into office on January 23rd, too.
And that's, that's pretty much in keeping, I think, with the vision of the Trump administration, free markets, allowing the markets to determine and remove government regulation and government interference as much as possible.
Absolutely. And, when you explain that, look, we didn't have the government regulating the internet for a while, and look what happened. Google and Amazon and Facebook and Netflix, all these companies that are now global powerhouses, they achieved that through the free market. And they didn't need the government regulating the internet in order to achieve success. And it's sort of odd for a Republican chairman to saying that President Clinton got it right in 1996 with a light-touch market-based regulation, but that's exactly the position I'm advocating. And makes it all the more ironic that some folks, at least, are criticizing me for my political views when, in fact, I'm representing what was, for decades, a bipartisan consensus.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, my guest, has been on before. And Chairman, you, as you pointed out at the beginning, you were in the minority before of the five commissioners, and you have taken consistently market-based approaches to how the government should regulate and to the degree it should our communications. But were you anticipating the type of reaction that you have gotten when you took over as chairman and, as you've pointed out, simply trying to return things to status quo the way they were before?
Well, I knew that just some of these issues, like net neutrality, generate a lot of passion and interest, and so I was expecting that. It's unfortunate, though, that some of the criticism has gone, in my view at least, over the line, and, you know, getting death threats over email, or, you know, folks at my home, you know, so that my kids can't play in the front yard. I mean, that's the kind of thing that, you know, I understand it, and people have the right to, you know, say and do pretty much anything, but, you know, let's just focus on the facts here, and let's keep things as civil as we can, and we might disagree at the end of the day, but let's live up to, you know, the better angels of our nature, so to speak, as opposed to you know, the lowest common denominator. And, you know, that's something I said when I was in the minority, and that's a principle I embrace now that I'm in the majority.
But have we seen the crossing of a line where it comes to civility when we have disagreements over these issues? It just seems to me we're seeing this across the board, whether it was the march on Washington the weekend after the president was sworn in, that there seems to be this, inability to accept the fact that we had an election and the outcome may not be what some wanted in this country, and they are dead set on trying to stop the changes that are being implemented by this administration, again, just to undo what the Obama administration did.
I have to say, there is a tenor to the debate, these days at least, that is unlike anything I've ever seen, and whatever the reason for it is, I retain that belief that, you know, America is best served when we embrace what Lincoln talked about in his second inaugural, that, you know, once the election is done, let's move forward together if we can. Yes, he put it, with malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right. Let us try to finish the work we are in. I mean, that is honestly the credo that has distinguished America from most societies throughout history, is that we don't let elections define everything about who we are. We move forward together, and we accept that people are going to have different views. And so, again, it might be a naive hope on my part, but I continue to believe that the FCC can and should be an oasis from some of the more politically tinged animus that we see out there in the discourse.
Well, Chairman Pai, let's talk a little bit about the FCC and beyond the net neutrality. As you, there's a comment period where you're taking comments on that. People are weighing in, and then the commission will go forward with a decision. What else can we anticipate from the FCC in the months ahead?
Two big things that I should mention. One is making sure that broadband, that high-speed internet access, reaches all parts of the country, and that we have more competition in the broadband marketplace. I grew up in a small town called Parsons, Kansas, about 3 hours south of Kansas City, and I'm keenly aware that in my hometown and in many other places like it, people don't have the access to the internet and to other technologies that we can sometimes take for granted here in Washington. And that's why on my second day, full day of office, after President Trump designated me the chairman, I gave a speech in which I said, I want us to focus first and foremost on closing this digital divide, making sure that people in rural America and even low-income Americans in urban America have the ability to have what I've called digital opportunity. And so we've already taken steps over the last 4 months to help create an environment in which companies are going to be willing to build out, to take the risk, to spend the capital in rural America, and hopefully there will be more to come. The second thing is making sure that we have rules in place that promote the public interest. Just today, for instance, I announced that we're going to start a process for thinking about blue alerts. And so many of your listeners are probably familiar with amber alerts when there's a child who's been abducted, right, or is otherwise in danger. We're considering doing something for law enforcement. So if there's an imminent, credible threat to a law enforcement officer, if an officer has gone missing or has been killed, we're thinking about putting out blue alerts to let the public know that there's some bad actor out there, and to get information about what to do. And different things like that to help people with disabilities communicate better, to help elderly Americans get online access and the tools they need, to help minority communities gain hope in this digital era. Those are the kinds of things we're doing that don't get a lot of headlines, but they are the bread and butter issues in the daily lives of millions of Americans. And hopefully in the time to come, folks out there, your listeners and everybody will be able to see that.
Of course, one of the areas that people most readily identify the FCC with are the responsibilities that they have to, basically police the airwaves when it comes to indecency on the airwaves. How much of a how big of a percentage is that of the workload at the FCC?
It's a big portion. That is one of the traditional responsibilities of the agency, and we get complaints every now and then about issues like that, and we look at them as best we can and make the appropriate judgment. And so that's something that I'm focused on both as a regulator but also as a parent of two young children. I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, and as they grow, and I'm sure this is the case for you and for other parents out there, you're keenly aware of the information that they ingest, because they're like sponges, so to speak.
Yes.
They soak up all the good stuff, but also potentially some of the bad stuff. And so it's an important function, and so long as Congress gives us that responsibility, we're duty-bound to enforce it.
Well, I think every FCC chairman should have young children. That'll make them even more sensitive. So, Mr. Chairman, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, and I look forward to watching what the FCC does in the months ahead.
Well, thanks so much. I've been incredibly blessed, and no small part of that is having the support of folks like you and your listeners. Thank you for what you do to keep folks informed, and stay tuned in for more coming from the agency.
You can find out more about Ajit Pai when you visit TonyPerkins.com. If you missed any of today's program, you can find a link to our topics when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.